Welcome to Mustardaionese. I am Matt.
I am Richard.
Are you awake?
I am awake. Very much so. Although I did go to bed very late last night, and of course we lost an hour. You know, it's funny. Somebody had some post on Dig saying that the RAAA is going to go to everybody who has illegally downloaded music and as way of payment take an hour of their time tonight, so be careful. In other words, that was their joke. It was a whole big RAAA
right.
thing. I thought that was funny.
Did you
see that they also did some study recently where they analyzed daylight savings time and found that now daylight savings time on average costs the American taxpayer X billions of dollars. When they first came up with daylight savings time, it was when there was farmers and light, you know, electricity costs was a real issue. But it's so massively been offset by the increased use in air conditioning that's caused by this change in the time that it actually is costing us money. So the entire reason for it, which made sense in the late 60s, early 70s when there's no air conditioning or not as much, is totally offset now from people increasingly turning on their air conditioning. So in other words, there's no point to daylight savings time whatsoever.
Well, actually, it's daylight saving time.
Saving time. I never understand.
Everybody.
I can never remember. Are we currently in daylight savings time or is it not? And I don't remember any of that.
No, it's the only reason I know that is because I need to know it for my job.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, we review things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest. Movies, TV, DVD, video games, and so forth.
Exactly.
So we don't need to rehash the last episode, which apparently has disappeared into the digital realm.
I hit record and I wasn't recording, but I am currently recording now. I'm watching it tick away. So, sorry.
Well, it happens. We didn't record last week because I was in Tacoma and you were passed out for the whole day.
Yeah. What was your fencing in Tacoma? How'd that go? Did you win?
No.
Okay.
The way they do it, it's you compete in pool bouts where everybody is divided up into pools, and then everybody in that pool fights each other.
Uh-huh.
And then based on that, you get the seeding, so you get like a Final Four bracket or something.
Uh-huh.
And then you go to direct elimination. So once we got into direct elimination, I was done. I was eliminated pretty directly.
Oh, there you go. Well, it's conveniently named, it sounds like.
Yeah, it was fun, except A, you're in Tacoma, which
is never fun.
Not an enjoyable experience. And B, it just took forever. And I've got this website I've been working on for a friend for the last 2 weeks, and
really?
I'm just dying to get it done with.
What are you doing?
That's the Sherry, the wedding photographer that I worked for.
Yep.
And we did the swap. I coded her website, and she shot the wedding.
Yeah.
So this, she... I don't. She's got someone she knows who like worked at Nordstrom and is a design professional. Designed the thing all with Photoshop and whatnot, and then I just go in and code it.
Oh, no kidding!
And I've got it all done except for this one Flash JavaScript thing I got to figure out. And I swear to God, if I can't get it done today, I'm going to kill myself.
Mm-hmm. I'm redoing a website too right now, or I'm doing this one for this company I now work for, And it's so funny because I redid two personal websites recently, and I did that just like, and I worked my butt off a month and a half ago, 2 months ago for that one website, and it was amazing. After like a month and a half, I literally forgot almost everything about Dreamweaver. I had to learn it all from scratch, sort of. And then the weird thing is not weird, but I'm now realizing that my website, though looks great and ostensibly is different, is structurally identical to the last three websites I've done. I sort of have developed a look and I'm sticking with it. It's just too hard to think up anything new. but it's going to be really good. This site's going to be awesome. But anyway, so what's going on? What do you want to talk about?
We should do our Oscar wrap up, but yep. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it.
Well, I did my guess. I did very well on them, all things considered, by just basically going with the consensus guess. Even though everybody said it was going to be this big, challenging year, basically, consensually, although I did go out of bounds on a little, pretty much the people they thought would win did win. I loved it. I don't know why people are so, apparently nobody watched the Oscars and it was dour and anything. I loved it. I thought the movies that won were great.
I really enjoyed the Oscar telecast, just out and out thoroughly enjoyed it. And what was surprising about it was, sort of the follow up and everybody saying, it's the fewest watched now, fewest number of viewers. It's the, in recent memory.
I'll call you right back.
Okay. Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, back recording. I don't know what was up there.
No problem.
You know, and it's pretty clear, as they point out, the whole viewers thing is entirely, for whatever reason, a product of whether it's like a big movie, and this was not big movie years. And people are saying, well, that's Hollywood's problem for not sending out big popular movies, and it's like, well, wait a second, that's not the point to the Oscars to, I don't know, just, it kind of left a bad taste in my mouth because this is a great year for movies. And if people don't watch it, well, all TV broadcasts are losing viewers. Don't sit here and sort of force Hollywood to start nominating a bunch of big crap movies.
Yep, I agree. I really enjoyed it. I thought Jon Stewart did a great job.
Me too.
I thought, because I think it was like 3 hours and 20 minutes, and everyone is always bitching about how long it is, and this one didn't feel long at all to me.
Not too much excess, although the montages, a couple of them were pointless. I didn't find the one all that funny where they're looking through the binoculars. I mean, not bad, but I don't know.
You didn't enjoy the tribute to binoculars and periscopes?
I got the joke and then it went on longer. And even though I got the joke, it was pretty clear reading some reviews. Some people thought, no, that's serious. That was actual stuff that they had prepared. I can't believe how stupid some people can be.
Reading
a couple bloggers, they literally thought, well, they did have some time. They could have filled it out and not put that in there. I'm thinking, are you an idiot? That was so clearly a joke. The other weird montage thing was, I'm sure you and everybody else noticed that all of a sudden in the Deadpool montage of people that died, suddenly like a third of them were like agents and stuff, and I don't ever remember seeing agents in there. And pointedly, for the first time I can ever remember, there was a big controversy over people they didn't bother to put in there, specifically Brad Renfro, and then there was this other actor who's literally been in 300 movies that passed away last year, and they didn't get put in the montage, and then they were very defensive. Well, we just didn't have space or room, and I'm thinking, no, you screwed up, because you could have easily fit more people in there, and you could also left out some of those frickin' agents. But anyway, I love the Oscars. I always loved it. And for the first time in a long time, I didn't tune it in a half hour in because I completely forgot it starts at 5 over here. So I got to see the whole thing. And because I started it on TiVo, I started at 5:30, but I was recording and I didn't miss anything. So, yeah.
Way to go. Well, unfortunately, as I've said in the past, my wife's cousin is a director of photography or a cinematographer.
Yeah.
Working her way up to actually work on things you've heard of.
Yep.
And she has a friend who's a member of the Academy, and so she went to the Oscars.
Wow.
So what that meant was that my wife had to watch all of the pre-Oscar red carpet garbage so that we could look for her cousin. Oh my God, you and I and snotty people like us would just recoil in horror just from the thought of such a thing, but actually having to watch it was so mind-numbingly bad.
I'll tell you, I watched both of them. I watched a little bit of the TV Guide show and a little bit of the ABC stuff with Regis. And what was funny was the TV Guide version, they were so woefully unprepared. It was, what's her name from Melrose Place and Joey Fatone. And they were trying to be as engaging as possible, but they didn't have a single producer that was at all prepared. So, for instance, they go up to interview Amy Adams and what's her name? I can't remember her name. She says, Amy Adams, you're so beautiful. So what's it like this year? First nomination. Are you excited? And then I instantly am thinking, oh God, I would have corrected her. I would have said, first off, she was nominated like 3 years ago for Junebug. And second of all, she's not nominated this year. She's singing a song that's nominated, but she herself is not nominated. Which Amy Adams had to correct her. And I'm thinking, damn, that's what those little producers are for, to have little tidbits on every star, feed them to these interviewers. Then you cut to Regis, and what does Regis do? Every one of his interviews, he talks the whole time and lets the person say one word. Brad Pitt or whoever it is, you have had just this great year. You're doing this, that, and you've had this happen. You've had that happen. How are you feeling? Good. Okay. Anyway, let's go on Angelina Jolie. And it was like, dude. So between the both of them, it was terrible. There's a kind of coverage you can do that can be fun, snarky, or whatever, and neither of these had it. But anyway.
Well, and We did was watch the ABC stuff, and there was one, it was before the Regis one. It was just the red carpet presentation or show or whatever.
Yeah.
And part of their deal is they're constantly going to this one woman in the booth, whose job it is apparently to check the website that they're constantly pimping, like redcarpet.com or something like that.
Yeah.
And like we're getting emails from all over the country, and at the beginning of the show they like read two emails. And then that was it. They would constantly refer to, oh, we're getting emails from all over the country, but they wouldn't read anymore because clearly it's a horrible idea.
Yeah.
But they kept going back to this person, and, you know, she's got a laptop in front of her, and she's, you know, she's on the internet, and it's synergy. It's great. But it so completely fell apart and served no purpose whatsoever.
Yeah, every once in a while they get some idea like that. My favorite was it the Grammys a couple of years ago when they had the hip youngsters up on stage determining how many illegal downloads were going on during the Grammys so they could shame everybody into realizing the problems of piracy or whatever.
Oh my God, that sounds horrible.
Oh, it was awful. It was, I mean, to their credit, they were completely freaked out and justifiably so, but it was a terrible idea. No wonder nobody watches the Grammys.
That was the one part about the Oscars that I thought was just cover your eyes awful was that president of the Academy going and doing the thing about the lawyers and, oh, I'm just going to walk into this room where they're doing the counting. We can't let you in. Nobody's allowed in there.
That's one aspect they put in every year. It's something about that. And I don't think anybody should. That's the one aspect nobody cares about. We assume they take care and do this stuff. Why do we need to do a little montage about the Academy? It's like they're putting it on. They get to do this one thing, and we're going to do it every year. But it really makes no difference. Put the damn thing on the internet. If people want to watch it, they want to watch it.
I agree. That's anyway.
But I did like it. Have you seen No Country for Old Men yet? Did you get to go see it?
No, because I've been working on this website. It's sucking up all my free time.
It's now on DVD, or it will be on Tuesday, so you can get it then, and it's a good one.
Are you going to get it?
At some point, I'm going to get it.
Apropos of nothing, I was at Fred Meyer yesterday and picked up Sunshine, so.
Wait, picked up? Okay.
The Danny Boyle sci-fi film, so.
Yeah.
If I get done with the website today, in enough time, I might go see the bank job, which I noticed you saw.
I did.
So I haven't read your review. What did you think?
And for some reason I can barely hear you, but I thought it was, what's the word? Workmanlike? Pedestrian?
Really? Because Wells just loved it.
He sure did, didn't he? it was, let's put it this way, there was not a single thing that was bad about that movie. Nothing. There was nothing that was bad, but that doesn't necessarily mean it was all great. It just sort of was. If it's hard to say, it just sort of, there wasn't a single thing that elevated, like an element that, yeah, it was all pretty good, but oh, the cinematography, or oh, the acting, or oh, the story, nothing elevated it. You know, to the movie's credit, it's a really complex story, supposedly a true story, and there's a lot of different players with different things going on, and I never felt, A, once, like I didn't totally understand the story, and B, I was being led around the nose for the story. That said, the challenge is, you know, Wells is going on, oh, a heist movie. He loves heist movies. And the problem with this is heist movies, you know, they end in big heists with a little denouement at the end. This movie, because of the story and the structure, the heist is halfway through the movie or maybe stretching a little beyond that. But so the problem is it just feels a little weird because the heist was to some extent rushed. They don't go over a lot of the typical stuff you have in with heists. But overall, I mean, it was one of those movies that is, there's nothing really bad about it, but also nothing particularly good that makes you want to just, you know, recommend it. Let's put it that way. So Wells liked it, but most of the critics, at least on Tomato Meter, has like a 76 rating, which is all things considered pretty good. But I suspect when I read the reviews, it's going to be a lot of B reviews. Like this is a B minus, maybe a B plus. You're not going to see many that are saying this is the greatest movie ever. So, but you may have a different take on it. I mean, there's a lot that's great about it. Jason Statham is good. All the actors are good. They're not bad in any way, but.
Well, I realized as I was reading Jeffrey Wells' review that I also really enjoy bank heist movies or heist movies.
Yep.
Probably the Inside Job being sort of the last, the last one. I'd never really realized that about myself. Like, wow, I really do enjoy this kind of movie. You know, the planning and the execution. And I love that too.
And you know what? This is different than that, and that's maybe part of it, because they're a slave to this thing. Basically, there's not a lot. They're just sort of, well, here's an idea for a job, and then they just get some people together, and they kind of just start doing it, which may have been in real life, but you're right. It's the planning, it's the execution, it's the two or three things that may screw it up, and then this one thing you didn't think about that screwed it up, and then you learn something. And usually with bank heist movies, there's one or two big surprises, you know, from Rafifi, which is like the great bank heist movie of all time, where like there's the whole job is done totally with no dialogue because they need to be quiet. It's like a 30-minute watching these guys go in and rip this thing off, all the while one little thing screws them up, and then the Ocean's movies and all of them, and this movie it's just different because they basically, I think, had to follow along with the true story. That said, you wonder how true everything is, because supposedly this entire thing was kept totally under wraps, yet the details in this movie are so very, very specific that you just wonder, and talking, and in some cases, very focused on real people, including, although they never mention my name, John Lennon and Yoko Ono are in this thing. They very much specifically talk about a very famous member of the royal family, you know. Oh, and then one other thing that ticked me off is, at the end of the movie, they have a series of title cards, because they, in this movie, you have to do it to explain what happened to this guy, what happened to that guy. And the frickin' movie theaters, I don't know if you notice that now, movie theaters, the second the titles come on, the end credits come on in a movie, they turn the lights on. You know, get the hell out of theater, move it along, move it along. Well, the end credits aren't on here. There's literally 2 minutes of title.
Oh, I lost you. Redialing.
Sorry, I don't know. Don't know what happened there.
Okay, 2 minutes
of end credits.
Okay, so two minutes of end credits. And,
lights on.
And, or not end credits, 2 minutes of title cards, but they turned the lights on in the theater. So this is part of the movie, yet the lights are on. You know, first of all, it's bad enough when they turn them on during the end credits, but this isn't the end credits. This is still part of the movie, and they're hustling us out of the theater. Is ridiculous. Made me mad.
Some moron didn't know where to put the magnetic tape on the film. Because that's what controls the lights going on and off. Or at least that's how it used to be. Maybe it's different now. But they actually put magnetic tape on the film.
When the last credit rolls, that's when the lights go up. Never before. But anyway, made me mad.
I find that interesting because I would have no idea this movie was out if it wasn't for Jeffrey.
Yeah,
Wells's
I didn't know
review.
Anything about it either until I saw some movie 2 weeks ago, and they had a preview for it. I had no idea it was coming down, no idea anything, and to its credit, it's like a purely London movie. In the early 70s, they don't have some American character to enliven it up or whatever. It's like a big budget movie, but it's purely, you know, it's well done for what it is. Nothing exceeded my expectations. But you might have a totally different take on it. You know,
that's one of those movies I don't really care if I see it in the theater. I'm perfectly happy seeing that on DVD.
So we'll see if I actually
I don't feel so bad about it either.
not much else movie-wise going on other than we're getting closer to Iron Man.
Oh my God, did you see that last teaser? First of all, I didn't realize that Jeff Bridges was in this movie until somebody pointed out, oh, and there's Jeff Bridges. I go, what? And I'm back for it, and I go, oh my God, I thought that was like a fat John Malkovich. I mean, Jeff Bridges has shaved his head. I didn't know it was him. All I know is that I want them to stop showing me new stuff because they're starting to give away all the beats of the movie, which the first trailers haven't. But second of all, I don't know how this movie's going to play out, but it's certainly all my reservations about John Favreau seem to have totally been, at least in terms of the trailer, been totally blown away. And the fact they keep using like AC/DC and other stuff in their soundtrack is a big plus in my book. But I've rarely been that excited about a movie like this. And often I try not to get excited about these comic movies because I'm nowhere near the fan that you are, but every once in a while I'll get excited about one and it'll disappoint me in some way. Not horribly, but in some way. And often when I go in with low expectations, they completely exceed them, like the last X-Men movie, which I thought was really good. And I went in there just assuming it was going to be a pile of crap. So this one here, I'm a little worried that I'm going to think it's going to be in Superman Returns, which I liked but didn't totally love. But I just assumed it was going to be the greatest thing ever. And it wasn't. And Iron Man, I'm hopeful. It just looks so good.
There's not too much else movie-wise.
Have you seen those previews? And Wells was mentioning for that Ben Stiller movie with Robert Downey Jr. playing a black dude.
They had a little sneak preview
on the website for it, so you could see him and Jack Black and these other people in it. And I have to agree with some of the assessments. If done well, it's a comedy, obviously, but if done well, this could be a great movie. I mean, it's directed by Ben Stiller, so you got to wonder, because a lot of his movies, you know, I'm pretty cold on. But it looked pretty funny, and my God, just in terms of looks, it's bizarre to see Robert Downey Jr. dressed up that way, because they've got it down pat. You know, somebody made the quote in the picture they had, that he looked a lot more believable as his character, certainly, than, you know, Ben Stiller and Jack Black did in their characters. But I don't know. I hadn't heard about that movie, and it looked compelling or interesting as well.
I think we talked about that last time. Don't need to rehash that. Oh, I borrowed Transformers from buddy John. Watched that again
still
last week.
It was even worse than I remember. And I knew it was bad when I borrowed it from him.
I just wanted to see the robots transform.
Which they did admirably.
Fantastic job, Industrial Light and Magic.
But another reason I wanted to borrow was I really wanted to see the documentaries.
Here's how we made the robots.
And they were okay.
It wasn't quite as
detailed as I would like it to have been. But I'm flipping through, and part of it, you see,
here's the two riders, and they're going to, like, literally a Transformers convention on the East Coast somewhere, which just looks like the biggest... I've been to conventions before.
Well, it's pathetic, but it was really there. If there's anything these movie companies have learned, you do your best in whatever way to embrace whatever fanboy element there was out there. And I'm sure when they were there, they're going, there cannot be a Transformer fanboy element. Oh, God, they have conventions. Well, we better send the frickin' writer to it and film it so it looks like we're trying to, you know. That's why when the movie was coming out, you'd hear these little snippets of info. They changed this at the suggestion of certain fanboys who did this and that, and I'm thinking, damn, this is not Lord of the Rings. I don't think anybody cares one way or another how Optimus Prime is coming across, you know, in this way or that way, but, you know, anyway, that's what I chalk that stuff up to.
That's actually a really perceptive remark about this is not Lord of the Rings. And I think they tried to squeeze too much mythology into it. And, you know, Cybertron, and there's this cube called the Allspark, and it's so ridiculous. I mean, of course, the whole concept... It just wavers back and forth between over the top ridiculous and then approaching it from the believability but still ridiculous line. And I understand it's a very hard line to do, but from the, you know, and the two guys who were the writers, they look like nice guys, and I'm sure they're perfectly fine, but the biggest problem with this movie is the script. It's not even Michael Bay. It's just that the way they wrote it, it's just, there's so many groaner parts.
It's funny how the scripts come together and how they put them together, because they're just, it's so clear they're, I feel bad for writers, because I just assume everybody that writes a movie is really talented, but the end result is the product of being beaten down by all these requirements they're putting on you.
Right.
You know, I love PC Gamer magazine, and you were talking about Akira being made into a movie, and the editor of PC Gamer, you know, wasn't on the podcast 2 weeks ago, and they were saying why? Well, because he's being holed up in a hotel in Hollywood for the next 6 weeks writing the script to Akira. Apparently, somehow they've hired, I didn't know he had this side career as a writer, but the editor of PC Gamer is the guy that they've hired to take the first go-round at the Akira script, which I imagine by the time it's done, he probably won't even have a credit on the movie, but I thought that was interesting. And you got the distinct sense. They hired him for a very specific reason to, you know, and then it will be tweaked. Actually, Akira's probably not a good example, but some of these other ones, they just, you know, the writer, it's almost like making sausages. They put the ingredients in, and then everybody else determines how it's actually going to work. You know, that's what you get.
Still there?
I'm here.
Still there?
Can you hear me?
Oh, your last word cut out.
Let's see, switching to TV, I'm getting more and more excited about Battlestar Galactica coming back.
Even though it's supposed to be April, I still don't think I've found an actual date yet.
But Rainley, that's because the Universal High Definition channel has been rerunning older episodes.
Is it in the can already? Is the whole thing filmed?
They had at least half of the last season filmed before the strike.
They might have had up to three more episodes before then.
And I assume that they're redoing now
to get everything done before the actors.
Because it's the weirdest thing, you know. The Wire is tonight's the last episode of The Wire, and I've been hearing a lot of the people. They've had like a little HBO viewing party, and a lot of the actors I've been hearing on the radio and stuff talking about. But the funny thing is, they literally filmed the last episode like 8 months ago. And The Shield is another one which I love. The Shield is over. It doesn't exist as a series anymore. They filmed the entire final season and wrapped it up over like 5 months ago, and it hasn't even started yet. So it's kind of, it must be weird to be an actor to all of a sudden the coverage comes up and everybody's fading you and giving you all these accolades and stuff for your work that you finished a long time ago versus other series like The Office and stuff. They're, when they goes into production, they're going to be putting those episodes out like a week after they finish them. I just find it interesting the economics. No,
I completely agree. And it's interesting because it's, they do it with these niche series like Battlestar Galactica, and they announced, oh, we're not going to show you the next season for, you know, 9 months or 12 more months. And normally you'd think a regular audience would be like, are you insane? I will have moved on to American Gladiators by then.
I don't think people actually moved on to it as so much as made a pit stop and realized it was as bad as it was.
I'm just using that as a silly example. But especially with Battlestar Galactica, you've got this hardcore fan base that will do whatever it takes to watch it. Like, wait 9 months? Okay, fine. You know, you want me to buy, now I'm mentally farting, but, you know, I'm sure there's a limit. You don't want to, you know, 5 years, people start getting bored, but you've got this really intense fan base that is willing to wait that long because they know
I almost think that Sopranos set the standard for that because, remember, they'd have these 13-episode seasons, but they would literally, between a couple of seasons, there was like a year and a half. It's like, that's crazy, but it was all the economics and the way they did it. They had to put everybody together in a window to get it up, and at a certain point, it's just hard to keep them on retainer and have them do it. You know, every fall we're going back to.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
So I don't know. But anyway, so speaking of the end of the seasons, you know, The Wire ends tonight. I'm doing my best to avoid any articles about it, read anything. They'll give anything away. But it's the final episode of what I think is probably the best TV series ever. And one of these days when you get a chance, like if you get Netflix or something, you definitely owe it yourself to just watch the thing straight through from the first season to the end season. It's like 60 episodes and it'd take you a couple of weeks, but it is the best show ever. It is so good.
Well, it turns out that the dude, it's a chick.
Okay.
I'm just kidding.
I can't remember if there's a website. There was somebody put together a website all about movie spoilers and other stuff, and the website is called thedudeasachick.com. I think if I remember reading about that somewhere, I thought, that's a great name, thedudeasachick.com. Because anybody that hears that knows exactly what you're talking about. It's funny, The Crying Game did relatively well in the theaters when it came out like 18, 15 years ago. But if you say, oh, the dude is a chick, I'd say 40% of the people you talk to are going to know what the hell you're talking about. They're going to go, oh, yeah, The Crying Game.
That would be the reverse, wouldn't it?
Pardon?
Chick is a dude.
I mean, the chick is a dude. I'm sorry, the chick is a dude.
Yeah.
I was totally blank. Oh, did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
Hey, speaking of movies, I read the most amazing thing yesterday. I don't even understand why movie companies or why the entertainment industry still only publicizes domestic box office. Because it's so clear that that's becoming a smaller part, pardon me, of the pie for a bunch of reasons. And one thing that blew me away was they were talking about, I was reading this article about they're contemplating a Golden Compass sequel. And I'm going, what, are you kidding me? That's like the biggest flop in the history last year. I mean, this movie, they spent $200, $180 million on this movie, and it did nothing in the U.S. And then I went and looked online and saw, first of all, it did $70 million in the U.S. Not good for what they're hoping for, but the thing's on its way to making about a half a billion dollars worldwide. Definitely in the realm of maybe we should do another, you know, sequel to this. And I couldn't help but thinking, why in the hell do they only publicize the local figures? It would be like, we're going to talk about Boeing, but we're only going to talk about the sales Boeing does to American Airlines and U.S. Airways. And even though it might make three times as much selling planes to China and Ryanair and Ireland or whatever, we're not going to talk about that. And when those are you know, as or more important to the bottom line, at least for the movie companies. So I was just blown away. Normally I keep a pretty good tight, you know, idea on how movies are doing, but I had no idea. Now, of course, the problem with the Golden Compass is New Line, when they were funding it, they wanted to share the costs, so they sold the foreign rights. So consequently, New Line, which put up most of the money, only brought in $70 million domestic, yet the company, whoever did the foreign distribution, which put up like a third of the money, is getting 70% of the profits. So they kind of screwed the pooch on that one. But anyway.
Well, and as a result, they are no longer an independent entity.
I know. It really sucks because New Line's been around for 40 years, you know, and admittedly, for the longest time, it was a lot of Freddy Krueger and a lot of innovative, you know, low budget things, but it was an independent, you know, company, and now it's not. They basically just eliminated it, which is not good.
Yeah. But I'm going to move over to video games for a little bit.
I finally finished games. I can't afford them.
I finally finished Half-Life 2, Episode 2.
Oh, yeah?
So I am now caught up with the rest of the video game world.
Yep, good for you. I liked that one. Of course, I went back and did a bunch of the stupid things, and they have the one achievement where you pick up this stupid gnome. And let me tell you,
which we've discussed.
Did we discuss? Okay, yeah. And you know how, but you'll do something that just stresses you, but you're just trying to finish it, but you have this kind of pit in your stomach while you're doing it because it's not easy. That was that.
I call that work.
Pardon?
Yeah,
it's work.
Well, it was sort of, but there wasn't any enjoyment to it, which normally Half-Life I have it. That one there, just picking up that damn thing and having it get knocked out of my hand, and you can't shoot somebody while you're holding this thing, and oh, God, that was stressful. But I did like it. I'm very excited to see where they go with the next one because I liked the way that played out, and I liked it better than episode one. I thought episode two was better. And the final battle, you know, you can get an achievement if you protect all those buildings, and I get the feeling I need to play that like 5 times, but I can't imagine protecting all the buildings in that final battle. You know, were you able to do that?
I can imagine it, but it would take such an incredible time investment for me to learn the layout well enough.
Yeah, that's what I mean, because at this point you got to run back and go here before they get there and hit them just right, and it's like, you know, I just want to win the thing and get it over with.
Oh. Well, and to me, it's, you know, their driving controls for that car are so frustrating.
I know, I hate that. I mean, when they designed that car, it's like, God, you know, Valve, you're so good at everything. Why in the world do you have the steering wheel and the accelerator part of the same mechanism? It every time I get in that car, I want to run over to Bellevue and start strangling them. I'm thinking, what other driving game do you know doesn't have like the steering wheel be the joystick and then the gas be one of the triggers or something? Why in the world they couldn't do that? I mean it defies all logic to me. But I got used to it. I dealt with it.
Anyway, that to me was definitely an inhibiting factor to even trying to attempt that.
Yeah.
And it would just be a gigantic time sink either way.
But overall, having completed the entire universe, I think it was a good value for your money, especially considering you've got Portal with it.
Well, of course, that is the best value ever.
And what about, did you ever get into or play Team Fortress? I sort of haven't.
No, and it's only because the first couple, well, I was so anxious to get through the other stuff, I didn't really pay any attention to it.
Yeah.
But the few times I did try, and again, this I haven't tried lately, I was unable to find any matches.
Oh, really?
Either because I kind of forget how it does it. It lets you choose like ranked or unranked, or you know. Yeah. And I was trying to find the easier one since I'd never played before, and it would search around for 5 minutes and say, "Oh, nope, can't find anything." Or you have to either join someone's party, someone else that set up a game and is looking for people to participate, or you have to set up your own. And since I didn't know what I was doing, I didn't want to set up my own.
Well, it's definitely the equivalent. I mean, it's definitely not the equivalent. It's definitely, in so many respects, the polar opposite of Halo 3. It's extremely fun like Halo 3, but it involves lots of strategy, lots of, and if you're going to succeed as a team, really thinking it through real effectively, like who am I going to assist, what am I going to do, versus Halo where you just jump in and start shooting and it's your own skill. So it's definitely interesting. I played it. It was fun, but I get the feeling the funnest it would be like on a LAN party or with a bunch of people you know.
Well, the other problem, all my friends that would play it have this on their PCs and not, they don't play the console version.
Oh, they can't play console. They don't.
Well, it's not that they can't. It's just that.
No, I'm saying they don't. It's not like Shadowrun where you can play one versus the other.
No, that's correct. It is not.
Which is probably a good thing because honestly, you know, I did testing with that and Shadowrun. I don't think they ever figured that out. Basically. You know, that whole how to dumb up one to make the other, you know, work. So it's probably best they keep those worlds separate.
There's a few. I know Grand Theft Auto's the next big thing.
Oh, I cannot wait. I'll find the money for that.
I know that you will. I guess really that's about it for video.
Did you hear about Bully? They finally released Bully on a newer version on Xbox, and I think PlayStation, but PlayStation 3 maybe. But Bully was Rockstar Games, one of their post last Grand Theft Auto games, and like a lot of things, they totally played it up like it was going to be another game. You get to play a bully in this boarding school, and you get to beat people up. In reality, the game was not like that. Apparently, it was rather clever, but it was only a PlayStation 2 game, so they finally ported it over, but apparently there's so many issues with choppy graphics and lag, and then the game just seizing on people, and people are like way upset on the internet boards in those series of tubes, and I thought it was interesting, a guy from Rockstar Games responded, said, "Oh my God, honestly, this did not come up in testing." And he basically took immediate credit for it, saying, "I don't know what's going on. We are going to fix this, yada, yada." It was kind of an interesting, panicky, but good response in a sense, which I thought was interesting. I would consider getting Bully because I heard good things about it, but I'm not going to buy, but apparently they updated like graphics inside the building, but outside, it's like playing in a PS2 game, and I'm thinking, well, you know, come on, you can do better than that. But you just got to wonder, you know, Rockstar has clearly put their D team on this because they've thrown all their resources after Grand Theft Auto, so they can only do so good of a port, you know. But anyway.
Did you see the coverage on the iPhone SDK? A
little bit, yeah. Yeah, it's exciting. I thought one of the coolest announcements was that company that was up there saying, "We've put together a $100 million venture capital fund because we're going to take some of the best ideas and we're going to develop them." You know, I thought that was good, and I thought the best thing about it—I mean, really—the number one competition to the iPhone is obviously BlackBerry for these business folks. And BlackBerry integrates really well with Exchange, which everybody has, and that was one of the big coverages here, is that now iPhone totally integrates with Exchange for your email and your contacts and other stuff. And I think it's iPhone's march to dominance. It's exciting.
We'll see. I mean, once they have that 3G version, I'm definitely getting one.
Yeah. Well, I finally have a cell phone again through work, but of course, it's Verizon. It's a one-year contract, so I definitely will not be getting, unless I come up with a lot of money on my own, will not be getting an iPhone until at least for 1 year. But maybe when that 1 year rolls out, they'll have a 3G version and stuff. That said, it was nice to hear Jobs and everybody say, "Yep, if you can do it with Wi-Fi, If you can do it with Wi-Fi, you can do whatever you want with the thing. And the reason why that's exciting to me is that they meaning VoIP. They're not breaking VoIP. Well, you go to some cities like Bellevue, and they have, like, access points everywhere. And part of my job is going to be at this one spot in Bellevue that has a beautiful access point. If I had an iPhone, I wouldn't even need the regular phone. I would just log on and use Skype or Vonage right through that phone and not even worry about their pay structure.
Mm-hmm.
That said, you know, a bunch of those phone companies have now come up with these $99 a month as much voice and data as you want. And I'm thinking, wow, if that's true, I wonder if that applies to the iPhone, because that's been the biggest problem people are having is going, you know, the data charges are just overwhelming for this thing, and it's not fast. But if they're going to give you a flat rate, I mean, I think usage of these things may just explode.
Yeah.
I'll get one at some point, whether it's the next generation or two generations down the pike, I will have one. I will probably get one after you get one, to my chagrin.
I just think it's really impressive what they've done and how they've upgraded what's already there. You know, that thing about the Google Maps and the quasi-GPS, you know, that really impressed me.
Yeah, that quasi-GPS, that's an incredible technology when you think about it. Sort of cobbling together a bunch of other stuff to do a incredible approximation of, yeah. Have you been following any of the coverage of the Vista lawsuit and other stuff without going into too much detail? They had the New York Times article yesterday where they quoted, where they said, I'm going to tell you the experiences of some people at Vista, and I'm not going to tell you who they are right away. Here's a guy who, you know, and they talk about this guy installed Vista on his two computers, and then he found none of his, like, printers and everything worked. And then it turns out that John was John Shirley, you know, like one of the three or four founders of Microsoft. And then another guy who...
Dude. Lost you. Hey.
So, and then another guy that was, you know, upset because this thing didn't work, that thing didn't work. But what it boils down to was that they're suing him because of this whole Vista enabled thing versus Vista ready or whatever, and I just want to put my two cents into it. In general, not in specific, in general, I love Vista. I don't quite, I can see what people's concerns are, but even a little thing, like I'm a kind of person, I just load my computer up with crap, tons of stuff, and then maybe once every couple of months, and it's probably a weird obsessive compulsive thing with me, I love just literally zapping out the hard drive and reinstalling everything from scratch. Just so I have this clean system with all this software on it that I know is going to work or whatever. And with Vista, I had to do that because things were screwed up probably because I loaded up with so much stuff. And the process for reinstalling a clean copy of Vista is very easy and very effective. So, you know, but in terms of that whole Vista-capable thing where people were got these computers that turns out couldn't do the max of what Vista can do, as near as I can tell, that only boils down to a little element of the visual interface. And that visual interface is such a minor part of Vista that it seems crazy that Microsoft is going to lose billions of dollars in some class action lawsuit over something that is not really a key element to Vista by my way of thinking. But I don't know.
But it's in the marketing, and if all the marketing's is fancy new interface, then yeah. Normal people associate that with what it is, regardless of its relative importance to what else it does. That's you've associated that, and
yeah, you're right.
And so I from that perspective, I do understand it, and I think it's the constant. You know, it's the struggle of appealing to people, you know, appealing to high-level people that are into computers and know to look up specs versus normal people, you know, that, you know, using parents as the usual example, you know, will a parent understand what this means? And if they see that, on the sticker, they're not going to look up. They have no differentiation between different types of Windows Vista.
You know,
so I understand it
as somebody who's had to come up with a lot of marketing phrases for things, it shows the real world dangers of thinking you've come up with the perfect choice of words without realizing that the effect it could have on your company's bottom line. Oh, Vista capable, because it's not quite the same thing or whatever. And it's like, you know, and could there have been a more damaging series of emails they had to release last week from Microsoft internally where they were talking, where they had these emails that were saying things like, from top level executives saying, this is crazy. We're doing this only because Intel didn't have this chip ready. So, and people vehemently saying, we can't release this like this as a sop to Intel or Dell or whoever. And then also a series of emails from, you know, top executives that themselves were confused about the whole marketing thing. I mean, none of that is good. And what's weird is everyone's all be using Vista. And my understanding is they built it completely from the ground up. But why, when I'm installing my fonts, am I back using the exact dialog box that came with Windows 95? The same, where it's too small to figure out how to install the fonts, and you're doing it in the same stupid way where you have to find the fonts, select them all, and then if it already has a copy, you can't just globally say, do this for all the future ones. Just ignore the copies. You have to sit there and hit, no, I don't want to copy this one. I mean, it's weird how supposedly the thing was built from the ground up, but there's still elements in there that are clearly the code is straight from Windows 95. I'm kind of surprised by that.
I don't know. If something works, I have no problem bringing it over. If they know that it's rock solid and there's no bloat in it. That being said, you're obviously, if you're complaining that it doesn't work from a UI perspective,
no,
it's disappointing.
It doesn't. It's never worked. It's always been one of my little frustrations, and it's clearly such a small part of it. I just was surprised because my understanding was the reason they spent those billions of dollars on it is literally they rebuilt everything from the ground up. They did not bring over legacy code. And this is clearly something that a programmer, a couple programmers in the space of 2 days could have cleaned up, but it was almost just like this little part of it that, you know, and what's funny is it's a part that most people doesn't even really occur to them because most people don't ever even add fonts. They just use what they get. But if you're a graphic designer and you're putting a new one in there, you end up having to install 100 fonts often or 200 fonts. And the process is as arcane and as goofy as it ever was. It's no different. And it's almost like telling them, you know, I cannot imagine Apple ever doing that because Apple really goes over bends over backwards to appeal to designers. But this here was almost like, well, we know we spent $1 billion, but we don't want to add that extra $30,000 worth of code. So you designers, you're the ones that we don't really care that much about. That's a pretty minor issue. I don't see what makes Vista all that better than XP, but I like it. I like the software. So I think people should shut up and buy Vista and not sue them, but that's me. I've enjoyed it. I like the product.
Never used it, so I have no opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, work uses some stuff that doesn't play well with it, so
really?
Not installed. I think that's probably about it for this week.
Yep. You going to see any movies this week? The bank job, maybe?
I'll try. We'll see.
Please don't let me dissuade you on the bank job. I mean, the fact is, I apparently am in more the minority, so you might really like it. And I know you and I both like Jason Statham, and he was good in this movie, so that's something, you know, going for it.
Yeah. I will try.
Okay.
All right. You guys rock at mustardamas.com is how you contact us. And that's it. I'm Matt.
I am Richard.
Thank you for listening.
Yep.